You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting from UBC, located on the unceded traditional Coast Salish territory of the Musqueam people. Hello, and welcome to Intersections, presented by the Gender Empowerment Collective. This radio show is presented every 4 weeks, where we dig into topics about gender, race, and social justice. We open our show with a conversation between your hosts, followed by an interview with an expert on the topic that we will be discussing.
Hi, and welcome to Intersections. My name is Chimdi.
I'm Tahia.
And my name is Tamwani.
And today we're going to be discussing the gendered effects of the pandemic. So what we're looking at is how the COVID-19 pandemic has impacted different genders differently. So what would you guys say are some of the gendered effects of the pandemic?
Okay, well, I think one of the things that's been like most prominent in like the pandemic, especially like for women, is the fact that like a lot more women have been losing the jobs just because of the job distribution and how like women are more likely to work in jobs like retail and hospitality and other jobs that have been like really severely impacted by the pandemic. We know that like a lot of restaurants have been closing down, a lot of hotels, or even like travel with like, you know, a lot of the times like an air hostess is usually female. So like that's one of the things that comes top to mind, like the effects of the pandemic.
Yeah, definitely. Like I think a lot of the times when we talk about like frontline workers, we don't talk about the fact that most of them are female, like especially when it comes to hospitality and healthcare. And we also don't talk about that most of them are immigrant female workers, right? And that's another like layer that I don't think is really touched upon, but those are the people that are keeping like the economy going, right? Like needing our services and like, yeah, and they really do face more risk when it comes to like COVID-19 just because they are, you know, at the most risk of being exposed.
I think we've been focusing a lot on the great work that like doctors have been doing during the pandemic, which is true, and like obviously we need doctors, but obviously like nurses, most of the nurses are women. And they've really been out there exposed to the pandemic, exposed to the virus more than anybody else. Yeah.
And I think that's what's really upsetting for me when like people don't follow the rules or like, you know, the restrictions that are set out because like they don't really, because they're not, they probably won't be the people to face the consequences, right? Like the people who are working service jobs are interacting with more people, they're interacting with the people who don't follow the rules, and then that's what just makes me the most angry, because like they're gonna face the consequences of other people's actions, right? And their kind of like unwillingness to give up certain things. That makes me really upset.
And I think like you brought up another great point as well, is like a lot of them are also like immigrants, and I think we have to recognize like the like intersections even between that and like being women and also like being, you know, people of color. It can often like affect them more. And like another point of like the frontline workers, like what do we consider like frontline workers? Like to hear brought up, like it's easy to recognize like doctors and nurses, they are putting their lives at risk, but to an equal extent that like, you know, delivery person who's working for DoorDash or like the person at the grocery store, they're also putting their lives at risk, right? And you know, they may not be earning the same wage as like a doctor or a nurse to be able to, if something happened, you know, be able to combat that or like take the day off or take the 2 weeks or whatever it is off. And I think it's like important to like recognize that as well, especially for immigrants. It's difficult, first of all, to find a job. And then like,
definitely,
you may have a bigger family and you're taking, you have a lot of responsibility. You don't have that flexibility to be able to like take time off, even in the middle of a pandemic. So I think that's important to recognize as well.
Yeah, definitely. These jobs are already undervalued, like before the pandemic, and even during the pandemic, we're just kind of expecting them to be there and expecting them to operate while we're all able to kind of like, I don't know, while most of us are able, some of us, I don't know the numbers, but when people are able to work from home, but they don't they still like demand the same amount of service from people where the situation has changed, like the global situation has changed, right? And it's, yeah, and it's also like the people working the undervalued jobs are people who are like, are undervalued, right? Like their identities are undervalued.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Like at a time when most of us, there are people that are losing their jobs, people that, you know, all of a sudden got to come home. We didn't have to go to classes anymore. People that are working got to work from home, or they, you know, their last hours they're working. The nurses, doctors too, but especially nurses, they had to work overtime. They had to work more shifts. It became so much more busy for them than it normally was, right? And so they really just are undervalued.
Yeah, it's scary. I mean, I was reading this article about like immigrant women specifically and their kind of role in the pandemic and how, yeah, like you were saying, the opportunities are already limited. And then now with this, like maybe the opportunities that they want are even further limited, and they're kind of like, you know, stuck working these jobs that they didn't really come here for. I don't know, like.
One of the things that, you know, women are facing is like also like the expected, like you're still expected even if you do work from home and you do have a job, like the kids are like at home right now, right? Like a lot of like young kids are like working on like doing school online, and a lot of the times it's like women who are expected to like keep up those roles and like help take care of the kids and also like still cook and also like somehow maintain a job, and the guy's just there like, yeah, I have work, but like we all gotta work, bro. So
yeah,
that's also
the one they're both working from home, but like they're still looking at you, like that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. But it just kind of like defaults back to like
it's like how it is. I mean, I saw this thing about how like if the woman is working a service job, like in a heterosexual relationship, if a woman is working a service job and she has to be out of the house for her position, and men have, the man has a job where he can work from home, then he's kind of forced to be in the caregiver role. And so in those cases, like people, I don't know, people like there's this idea that maybe like this will kind of push that like breaking down of gender roles. It's maybe just like in those situations, right, where you have to be like, this is the way it is, you can't like fight it. But obviously like that's not everyone, and that's not, and a lot of the time maybe they still won't want to do it, you know. So
yeah, I'm interested though to like if that for like even those like however many people are in that position where the woman is like in a service job and kind of has to be, you know, out for work and the guy is at home, it would be interesting to kind of see the effects like post pandemic, because I know like a lot of people have also said like, I, you know, I really, some people are really enjoying like spending the time with their family, because you don't really need to go to work like 9 to 5, like 5 days a week. Like the idea that like a corporation needs that much of your time is like ridiculous. Like it's really unnecessary. You could probably do the same amount of work in like 2 or 3 days if you really like pushed. But like, yeah, it'll be interesting to see if like people are just like, I want to spend time with my family, I want to like actually raise my kids like in person. And even guys, like if men, like more, are we going to see a shift to like more like stay-at-home dads? And like it will be interesting to see that.
I hope that does happen, like if they do want it to happen in that situation. I hope they, you know, that attitude changes, right? Like also the 40-hour work week, I agree, like shouldn't be a thing. And I think that everyone should have, honestly, like I think a lot of companies will stay working from home because they'll probably realize, or some sort of like in between, because I think they realize that it was never necessary, not never necessary, but like, it's not really necessary to be there in person for a lot of these things.
Yeah, I feel like hopefully there's some like long-term changes, or maybe like it might revert back to what it was before. I guess we'll say like, oh, this is the pandemic, you know, these were the kind of, we did what we had to do like during the pandemic, right? But then now we can kind of go back to how it used to be. Hopefully there's
hopefully something sticks.
Like
I feel like everyone's gonna be more everyone's gonna be more clean, like sanitary after the pandemic. I feel like that's kind of been ingrained a little bit more. So hopefully, you know, breaking down some gender role expectations also sticks. But speaking of like restrictions, I think that there has been like observations that women are better with respecting these public policies and like abiding by them compared to men. Like, I know that another collective member, like Randy, was talking about in a previous meeting how, yeah, men thought wearing masks was like too feminine, and they were like, it makes me look, I don't know, like they care too much and that's bad. And it was kind of affecting their masculinity to wear masks. I mean, I don't know if that's really changed at this point because that was kind of early stages, but yeah, that attitude.
I think it just kind of ties into like hygiene, like taking care of yourself. Just like, I think women just tend to be more like caregivers. They tend to be more, just by nature, I guess, or maybe because of like societal expectations, just, like look after each other. So like, they tend to like revert to taking care of their families. They're more open to like following public health measures that maybe not necessarily are good for them, but they're like good for other people, right? Mm-hmm. And so, yeah.
I also think about in terms of like the wider context of like, I feel like a lot of times like women do things for the good of, you know, most people, like even like in the situation of like a home, like I'm sure like after like a long day at work, nobody wants to like cook a like full course meal for their family, like not like the physical labor of it, right? Like maybe you want to do it like your heart, whatever. But like, you know, as a woman, you just like, you kind of get to it. Otherwise people won't eat, you won't eat, right? And if your husband's not going to do it, then who will? So like the idea of that also in terms of like wearing a mask, like you know, washing your hands. And it's such like a simple, you know, to me anyway, like, I feel like it's such a simple sacrifice to make for like the greater good of like the community. And I feel like it's part of just like being used to like thinking of other people. Mm-hmm. And I think maybe if you're in a position where you're always able to like put your needs first, it's like, why do I have to put this thing on my face? Why do I have to wash my hands? It's like, it's not that, not a lot, but
yeah,
I guess it's too much.
Yeah, that's so true. I guess we are. I think like most women are raised with the expectation that they're gonna have to care for other people, or that they should care for other people. And like, I don't know if most guys are raised with that expectation that you need to be like caring, you know, like that's not something that we're like, men need to be caring. Like, we don't put that expectation on them, even though we should, and they haven't grown up with that. And so now when someone's like, yeah, like, can you put a mask on? It's like, why do I need to? You know, like, I don't want to. And yeah, that's definitely, I feel like the stream of thought.
It also makes me kind of think of like toxic masculinity in the sense of like, kind of like having to put up a front that you're like, kind of like Mr. Indestructible, and that, you know, you're not like, you know, virus can't hurt you or whatever. It's like, if you put on a mask and like, you know, even though we do know that it's more for like the protection of other people, more than it is the other way around, but it's still kind of like accepting the fact that, you know, so you can catch this virus, like nobody is immune to it.
Right.
So part of like, I don't want to put on a mask. It's like, I want to show that I'm like the tough guy. And like, I don't know.
You're like, I have no weakness. I can't catch.
Yeah.
I can't catch a virus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just dumb.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's like unfortunate too, right? Because even though with a mask, you're not putting it on for yourself, right? But so like elderly people, right? The other people in society that are more like susceptible to the virus, like we need to be doing our part for the people that like can't do anything about it, right? Because it may not like, we may not be at risk, but there are people that are. So yeah, it's unfortunate that some people have that mindset, for sure.
Yeah, I think that people definitely act like if they're not living with an elder or like a child or somebody with like, you know, immunocompromised, if they're immunocompromised, like they think that they can do whatever they want and then they won't come across somebody on their way. Like, I feel like that attitude is so strong, especially on like a university campus when people are living in dorms and they're like, we're all young, we're all like wild and free, and like, yeah.
there's definitely as well like a lot of like people have been having parties, and like I'm not trying to call out nobody's like, you know, people's, but like but like the frat houses have been like known to be hosting like a lot of like parties. Even like I guess like it got to a point where like we are at a point where I think like people and the like the rules are like laxing a little bit. But even like in the beginning where everybody was like pretty scared, like I was surprised sometimes to like walk by some of the frat houses and there would be like people outside and like obviously like going against like the guidelines, and kind of like I was like, okay, yeah. is this what we're doing?
Yeah, that's just like crazy. Like we're in a time and like people are like losing their jobs, like borders have shut down, like these are very like extreme, like surreal circumstances that we don't have classes, no lectures, they're like canceling or like, you know, midterm and final things like that. And then like for it to be that extreme and still people can sometimes give up things like, you know, a late night like party on a Friday night, yeah. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah, I feel like the one of the points is also like, you know, there's a sense of like, even if I do get sick, like as you said, like with university students, a lot of us are like, you know, we're young, like even if we get it, it's not going to be like that bad. But like even in the case that you do get sick, like usually it's your mom taking care of you, it's going to be that female nurse most likely is going to take care of you. So another point is like people kind of assume that there's going to be this automatic carer anyway and they're going to be fine because of that. Mm-hmm. I think another important aspect is like, well, look at the fact that we're so reliant as a society and as a community on women as well, like even, you know, in the time of a pandemic.
Yeah, and like they're just taken for granted, like you say, like they're just mm-hmm. like they're just gonna be there and they're gonna take care of me and I'm gonna get better, but you're not thinking about the fact that they're like, yeah, exposing themselves to you and you're sick, you know, to that person and their sickness, and they have a family mm-hmm. and they have a life, and mm-hmm. and they could get sick. Like a lot of nurses have gotten sick and like suffered repercussions because of that, but they're doing it, and so but they don't want to be doing it. Like it's not like, yeah, it just, I think you have to think about everyone that you encounter or everyone that helps has to help you along the way if it does happen, right? Instead of just mm-hmm. thinking about you and the fact that you're young and that you're going to be okay. And it's just, it's not, there's so many people that will help you along the way. On a brighter note, I know we wanted to talk about female leaders during the pandemic. The Prime Minister of New Zealand, feel free to jump.
I think it's Jacinda Ardern.
Jacinda Ardern.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think they had, coronavirus situation in New Zealand was, it was handled really well. It wasn't that like, that it wasn't there, because it was, but yeah, they've handled it really, really well. And I think, yeah, for a few weeks now, I'm not sure exactly what date, but for a few weeks now, they've had zero coronavirus cases. So they were had to like, they were able to reopen everything, and they were able to go back to like, everybody was able to go back to work, go back to classes. Yeah, and so it really goes to show there aren't a whole ton of female leaders in the world to begin with. But it does say something that, you know, New Zealand, which has a female prime minister, that they've been able to handle it so well, they've done so well, when other countries have not done so well.
I think it, like, one of the things about, and people made this kind of show, is that the female leaders, and I guess, like, we just have to use kind of Jacinda Ardern as, like, the example, because, like, she's kind of the one who's been praised most for this, but they took more of an approach of, like, taking care of the people. Again, maybe it's, like, that kind of aspect of like, as a woman you're raised to kind of be the carer, so like rather than like a lot of the different countries, you know, a lot of us who live in countries that are led by men, we've been hearing a lot, oh, we don't want to shut down because of the effects of the economy, like what's going to happen to the economy if we shut down, blah blah blah. And like somebody like Jacinda, who quite early on, I think before they were like, I'm not sure how many cases they got up to in their peak, but like very early into the pandemic where other people, I think, were like still open, she was like, no, we need to shut this down because this is going to kill a lot of people. And she kind of put people's lives first ahead of the economy, and just shutting down immediately for a shorter period of time when there were less cases was able to kind of like give that barrier to like no more new cases coming. And now they're in a situation where, you know, as Tahia said, like there's like zero cases and they've been in that situation for many weeks. And like many other like male-led like economy first like countries, right? Yeah. Where like now we're still suffering from this pandemic and new cases and new variants and all these things that are coming up. And I also think like it's like a lot of the times with like female leadership, like people like kind of always like tell you to kind of like, they don't say it outright, but like some of the tips are like kind of like be like a man, like stand up straight, like dress like this, like talk like this, maybe like, you know, pull back your shoulders, deeper in your voice to like be more assertive. And it's like, you don't have to become a man to be a good leader, you know, quote unquote, like if we're taking into like, these are like, you know, masculine attributes, right? Like the traditional masculine attributes, you don't have to take on that. You can still be caring and like nurturing if that's, you know, how you are, and like be a good leader. So I think, yeah, it was interesting to see that.
It's also really interesting to think about how even though in like, especially in like North America and like Canada and the US, how because our leaders were hesitant to shut down right at the beginning for the economy, if you kind of look at long term, I don't think those decisions have necessarily had positive impacts on our economy. I think if you look at New Zealand now versus our countries now, it kind of goes to show how, you know, them putting the people first is actually, their economies are, you know, in a much better shape now because they put their people first. And, you know, we're still kind of stuck in this where people are still, you know, people are still unemployed and we're still not able to go back fully yet. So yeah, it's just kind of, it's interesting to see.
Yeah, yeah, it definitely feels like we're stuck in some sort of limbo because, you know, we'll lock things down, we'll open it up for businesses and then do this and go back and forth, and there's no like coordination, and we're just kind of, you know, really just like riding the waves as they come instead of, yeah, instead of just taking a strong stance like Jacinda did in the first place, right?
It's tough because there's definitely, if we go into lockdown, if we shut down like restaurants and gyms, there's a lot of people that then are going to be out of jobs and get unemployed, right? So it's hard because while we do need to take care of people and like this virus is important, people's lives are important at the same time, it's affecting people's livelihoods, and there's people who they're going to lose jobs, right? And they can't support their families, they can't feed their kids. So it's, I mean, it's a hard balance, right? Of like how should we like go about this? How much do you shut it down, right? And how much do you kind of keep it open because people need to, they need to earn a living.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a tough call, but I feel like if you, you know, the government has the means to subsidize people and continue to support them, you know, if they choose to like shut down or do lockdowns, but, you know, will they exercise it, you know, to the level that people actually need? I don't know, but they do have it, and that's a decision in itself too.
It's also like that kind of like piece of like the what made it like particularly successful and why the like economy didn't suffer as much, I think, in New Zealand, is that she did it like quite early on. And I think like in a lot of these like other countries where like they kind of prolonged it, or they kind of thought, well, this is happening in China, this can't really like, whether it's America or wherever, I actually took like a psych course where like we were talking about how Donald Trump was kind of like talking about the pandemic in a way like, oh, it's pretty bad for China, but hopefully everything's gonna be okay, like, you know. And it's kind of this like exceptionalism, this American exceptionalism, or whatever, Western exceptionalism of like, which in predominantly male dominated countries in the West, right? Or male led countries in the West, of like, you know, we'll be fine because we've always been fine, and we're the West, or we're America, or we're this. And, you know, just by virtue of being an American, like, or being America as a country, like, it's gonna be okay. And I feel like it's weird to make this link, but to me in my head, it's like linked back to that like piece of like, you know, wearing a mask and you showing like a little bit of like vulnerability, right?
Right.
In the same way of like shutting down, you're showing that, you know, like China is like a country like everywhere else. They're, you know, their people are people just like, you know, our people are people.
Yeah. Exactly.
If their people are dying, it could come here and like affect us in the same way. So it's that same piece of like putting the community first, and like not having the sense of like you're indestructible just by virtue of like, I don't know, just being you.
Yeah, America refused to put a mask on.
Exactly. The metaphorical mask. Yeah.
Man, I'm like, it's just very funny to think about like the act of putting on the mask. If you're kind of doing it in retaliation, like you, because you think that this mask represents like being forced to stay at home, being forced to stay indoors. So like choosing not to put it on, it's only going to prolong the amount of time that you have to stay in that situation, right? So
I think we've talked a lot about how when you don't follow protocol, when you don't follow kind of the restrictions that like the guidelines, you're not putting yourself at risk, but you're putting a lot of service workers at risk, a lot of different, you know, people in healthcare, hospitality. And yeah, what we've been talking about this whole episode has basically been like those people are usually going to be female, and they're usually going to be the people who are taking care of their families, the children, the elders. And so I think that's just something that you need to think of, or that people in general need to think about as they go about their life in this COVID pandemic world, is that these are the people that you're affecting, and these are the people who will face kind of the most real consequences.
Accessibility,
disability,
mental health,
ADHD and ADD,
and many, many more topics we explore and cover.
But where?
On CITR's All Access Pass.
A unique and collectively run show on equity, inclusion, and creating awareness for people of all abilities in BC and around the world.
Catch us every other Wednesday afternoon from 3 to 4.
If you want more info or want to get involved, please find us on Facebook or send us an email at accessibilitycollective@citr.ca.
Discorder Magazine has been supporting local music for over 30 years. Thanks to the long-term support of the Rickshaw Theater, Discorder lives. Your favorite bands are playing at the Rickshaw Theater. Check out their calendar just behind the cover of Discorder Magazine or at rickshawtheater.com.
Hello, and welcome back to Intersections. We are here with our guest, Dr. Marina Adshade. She is an assistant professor of teaching at the UBC School of Economics. Through her work and her research, she invites people to better understand sex and love through economics, and the author of the book, Dollars and Sex. Thank you very much for joining our show today.
Thank you for having me.
We're very excited to talk about this topic of the gendered impacts of COVID-19, because I think it's something that was like really talked about in the beginning. Like I remember reading a lot of articles, but I feel like now a lot of people are kind of losing the attention to it. So we'll just start with our first question. So when the pandemic first began over a year ago, we saw a large drop in the rate of women's employment. What do you believe are the long-term effects for women in the workforce from this large drop?
Yeah, so when the pandemic started, I think we all knew things were going to be different this time, because usually when we have a recession, it's men who lose their jobs. And that's because men work in manufacturing and manufacturing jobs go first. But when the pandemic started and all the jobs that were being lost were, you know, in food services, in health, in education, it was pretty clear that this was going to have a big impact on women's employment. And then you add to that the fact that women had all of this additional childcare burden, you know, especially with schools closing and daycares closing. So women weren't just losing their jobs. Women were having to cut back on their hours. Many, many women cut back their hours to zero, right, in March and April. And it was really, really concerning at the time. And it's interesting to see how this has kind of played out over time, because people have gone back to work, but women just still haven't gone back to work at the same rate that men have gone back to work. Right. And where this becomes a concerning long-term issue is it possible that there's some women who will never go back to work? There's a couple of groups of women who are particularly concerning in that respect. The one group of women who I worry about is women who are a little bit older, like women who are my age. I'm 53. You know, for older women, there's a lot of intersectional discrimination between age and gender. And it's just so much harder for older women to find new jobs when they lose their jobs, just not in a way that it is true for older men. So I think there's very possible a lot of women who are that age are not going to be, might not ever return to the workforce. And that's a huge loss. It's not just a loss for the women. It is a loss for the women, but it's a loss for us as a society. You know, if we want to talk about women moving into positions of leadership in this country, you know, most of those positions people achieve at the end of their careers. We already have a big deficit of women in the workforce in their 50s and 60s because of discrimination and health and other issues. So that's one of the things I think where there's a lot of potential for long run impact. But then there's also, you know, younger women. Younger women have really carried the majority of the burden. You know, people who work in restaurants and people who work in supermarkets, work in tourism and stuff like that. I don't know that people realize just how female dominated those jobs are. And even for people who kept their jobs, those jobs become super stressful, right? All you have to do is go to the supermarket to know that's true, right? And so, you know, I think that old, younger women have really shouldered the burden of the mental health burden that is being created by the crisis.
Yeah, I think, it's large. And it seems so obvious, but I think you're completely right. We lose grasp of like understanding who is working these jobs. And I think there's also like the other intersection of like a lot of these jobs, like frontline workers, as we've been referring to them, like in grocery stores and restaurants, are women of color. And like understanding the intersectionality of like who is carrying the burden of this pandemic.
They are. And you know, the thing is too, is it's all this other stuff goes along with that, that women, that people don't necessarily take into consideration. The fact that, you know, they're more likely to be women of color. They're more likely to be women in immigrant families. And because of that, they're more likely to be living, you know, in intergenerational homes. They're more likely to take public transit to work, which is just stressful and exposes more exposure to risk of infection. And you know, it's funny because a lot of the discussion at the beginning and throughout this pandemic has been like the burden that is being faced by women who are working at home, women like me who, you know, went off and worked at home, who have children. And I absolutely think that that is being difficult. But not nearly enough time has been spent talking about the women who have children, who working at home is not even an option for them, right? And especially, you know, if you, for families where you, you know, where people have really depended on extended families for childcare, maybe the grandparents who are taking care of the children and those kind of venues for help, family help were cut off in the pandemic, it's been an extremely stressful and difficult situation. And another thing too is like these people are not earning huge incomes, right? This is not somebody sitting at home, you're earning their $100,000 a year. Again, like I understand that that has been difficult, but this is not anything compared to just somebody who's earning minimum wage, you know, who maybe got an extra 50 cents on the an hour to deal with all of the additional burden from the crisis and having to deal with other other challenges as well. And so this has become extremely difficult for several groups of women, and that burden has not been evenly distributed for sure.
Yeah, I think our next question is kind of on this whole topic. We're just wondering like how the pandemic has highlighted the structural inequalities that women face. I know we've talked about a lot of it, the intersectionality, but is there anything else you can add on that topic?
Well, yeah, I think that really what it's highlighted is this, is that, you know, in British Columbia, 50% of women work in four industries: healthcare, education, retail, and food services. Why? Like, why do women work in those jobs? They work in those jobs because those are the jobs in which it's easiest to balance caregiving responsibilities at home, you know, caring for children, caring for spouses, caring for extended family and parents, and working. And so then really what we need to ask ourselves is like, how is it that we did in 2020, 2021, women are still organizing their lives around caregiving, right? It is that component of this that has made women really, really vulnerable, is because we are so occupationally segregated away from men, right? men work in many, many industries, right? You don't see 50% of men working in four industries. And so I think that that's really what's being highlighted here, is just how women taking on a greater share of the caregiving burden has made them particularly vulnerable in a crisis such as the one we're having now.
Yeah. Again, it's one of those things where people, like, I didn't even know that. I did not know that it was that female dominated. That's something that I've never really understood. Like, all the jobs that I've had up until this point in my life have been in the service industry or in childcare. Obviously I do not have kids, so I don't have to balance my jobs with childcare, but yeah, like, understanding, because it's the flexibility of hours. Like, a lot of salary jobs, they're not given any. Like, if you've ever seen the movie 9 to 5, it's personally one of my favorite movies.
Well, I love Dolly Parton, so.
And I think, like, that when they bring in, like, the flexibility of, like, working part-time, working different shifts, you see, like, the impact that it makes. And so, like, when jobs don't have those abilities and flexibility, like, women lose out on those opportunities because it's just not possible.
But, you know, it's so interesting, though, because, you know, when all this was going on and people were saying, what do we need? What do we need? And everybody says, what we need is more flexible workplaces for women. That's what we need. We need more flexible workplaces for women. I really think this is the wrong answer, right? We don't need more flexible workplaces for women. We need more flexible workplaces for everyone, right? And the whole idea that, you know, we're just going to be sit comfortably with the idea that women are doing all the caregiving and let's organize their work. We'll pay them a little less and we'll make it so they can leave work. This is not what we need. We will never have gender equality until we have flexible workplaces for men, right? We need to reach a point where a man can walk into the boss's office and say, I'm sorry, I have to leave early today because my child is going to the dentist or something like that. Then we will be further on our way for gender equality. So, you know, it's just because all it is ghettoizing women, right? And that's just not useful. It's not useful for, it's not even in men's best interest, right? Another thing too is there's a lot of these jobs where men would be really good at them. Right. I mean, there's no reason for healthcare to be so dominated by women. You think about nursing. Nursing is so female dominated, but it's actually a really good job for men. And, you know, especially since men have so much upper body strength and this like a very physical job, I think it'd be great to have more men in nursing. And I think that that men would like to be in nursing. There's a great study that was done in the Netherlands, where they found that, first of all, that men greatly overstate, it's about nursing, they greatly overstate how much other men would judge them if they became nurses. And then once they were given information that other men wouldn't judge them for being a nurse, they were much more interested in nursing as an occupation. So men are being shut out from these jobs as well, because they're just considered women's jobs.
Yeah, all that lovely heteronormative, toxic masculinity traits that we hold in our society so strongly.
Yeah, there's, you know, it's too bad, right? I think that, you know, you talk about toxic masculinity, but you know, so much of it is that the society's constant need to ask men to prove their masculinity to other men, right? That's just exhausting. I think this is exhausting. I think it's bad for us as a society. And I think it creates barriers that hurt men and hurt everybody else as well, right? Because people don't get to make their own choices. So much of their own choices are dictated by society.
Join us every other Wednesday from 6:30 to 8 p.m. for Sam Squanch's Hideaway with your host, Anita B., as she plays all Canadian music with a focus on indie rock and pop.
Red Camp Records is an amazing artist-owned and operated record store. Shop from their diverse online music collection and get free shipping within Vancouver and the Lower Mainland with the purchase of 2 or more LPs. If you would like to further support them through the evolving COVID-19 crisis, you can do so by buying a gift card to use at a later date. Visit www.redcat.ca for more information. It's better alone.
our next question kind of shifts gears a little bit. So our one of our members who was in your class mentioned your expertise on like sex and love and economics. So we wanted to ask a question kind of with regard to sex work in the pandemic. So in the pandemic, we've noticed a rise in the number of people supporting themselves with online sex work. So especially with the rise of the website OnlyFans. And so also just like a rise with the promotion of it across all forms of social media, including like TikTok is a really big one. So how do you see this affecting positive, negatively, the public perception of the sex work industry?
Oh, what a great question. You know, I've been paying a lot of attention to what's been happening to sex work over the pandemic, because of course, right at the onset, a lot of the sex workers were in a difficult position because many sex workers could not collect CERB, right? The payments, I mean, they qualified for CERB, right? So sex workers could collect CERB, but it required them to have filed their taxes the previous year. And because a lot of sex workers don't file their taxes, they didn't have access to the CERB. And they don't file their taxes for a variety of different reasons, one of which is almost certainly stigmatization, right, around their occupation, and just not a lot of support for that. So I have a friend who's a sex worker. They filed their taxes, they got CERB, and they took much of the time off because there's a cut in their income, but at least they continue to have income. And now they've gone back to work on a limited basis. A lot of other people didn't have that option, especially sex workers who have families to support, children to support, and so on. And so they were exposed to a lot of risk. And so for sex workers who, you know, can't limit like their customer base, which some of them can, right? I'm just like, I'm going to see the same customer every week. Prices went up, so that was good because prices needed to go up because I thought they're quite low here in Vancouver. But the you're right. There's been a lot of people who've been using websites like OnlyFans, TikTok, and even Twitter, right? I've a friend who's a sex worker who's on Twitter, makes reasonably good money out of Twitter as well. And so these services are great for sex work, and I think for giving some visibility to sex work. I would say, however, I think the amount of money that somebody can make is greatly overstated because there's just so much competition in the space. So one of your listeners might say, oh no, I know my friend and they posted this picture and they got $600. It's true that that could happen for one person, but there's an awful lot of people who are on the sites who are just not making any money because there's not an endless supply of people who are willing to pay money. And there's a huge amount of competition from other countries, especially Eastern Europe, countries like Prague and Hungary and so on, where the women are, they're actually much better organized for this type of work than we are here. But you know, I mean, I would hope that it would help to destigmatize some of this work. I like to think that Canadians are actually pretty progressive, but I live in my little bubble, right? Of people. But I will say this, and this is something that that should be taken to heart is next time we have an election in this country, which should be, I think will be soon, it'll probably be this year. This should be a topic that is up for discussion. This should be in the party platforms. I think it will be in the party platforms. And if it's not in the party platforms, I think people like you and me and your listeners, they actually need to raise it because we need sex work law reform desperately in this country. And I think that we need to make it an issue in an election.
Yeah. Well, I think it's any of these quote unquote controversial topics. Leaders just it's easier, they're just like, oh well, we just won't talk about it, like we won't go forwards or backwards. And I'm like, well, staying stagnant in this situation doesn't really work either. Thank you. Yeah, that's something we really thought about, it because I downloaded TikTok I think in September, and I like right away, like a lot of people promote, and it's also then interesting because you get into like the battle that they have to face with like censorship on TikTok. Mm-hmm. Like even when they're not promoting anything, like it's what you look like. And if they find out what you do, like the amount of censorship you face on these social media platforms just escalates.
Well, how about Zoom preventing people using the platform for sex?
Really?
Yes. There's so they theoretically, and anyway, they announced that they were adding filters to make it possible for the, because people were having like online sex parties via Zoom, which seems totally safe, right? And you have a bunch of consenting adults who want to have an online Zoom sex party. I don't see why you wouldn't allow that. But apparently Zoom tried to add some ways of detecting if people were using it for that activity, which is just so pointless, right? I mean, I don't understand. I mean, why they felt the need to do that. But there's all sorts of other barriers that exist. For example, a lot of credit card companies make it difficult to collect payments for sex work. And that kind of behavior pushes a lot of activity offline, and online is much safer. So if you're pushing it offline, you're actually making this is a less safe activity for the people who are participating.
Right. Yeah. So our next question, again, shifts gears a little bit, but lately on social media, I've heard the terms she-covery and she-session. So I've heard kind of both sides, like a lot of people are a fan of it. They think that it's important to like point out, as we've been talking about, the really large impact that the pandemic has had on women. Some people view that it's not very intersectional. It's leaving out non-binary people, people who, you know, it doesn't necessarily encompass race a lot of time. I'm just wondering what your take on the use of these terms are.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of this. So you started asking this question, it's like, oh gosh, the term, I can't stand the term. I just don't think it's necessary.
Yeah.
Anyway, you know, I said this already, and I'm going to say it again. So much of the positioning around this concept of the she session has been on like the hardship faced by essentially white, educated, working class women who are in white collar jobs, who are like now, you know, having to work at home on Zoom. There's been so much of that focus, and I think it just does a huge disservice to everybody, but particularly people who have been much harder hit and will face the much longer run consequences of the crisis. You know, I don't love it, but this is not really particularly doing me any harm, right? I think that the she recession and the she recovery, I think that this is, as you say, it's just not helpful, right?
Yeah,
conjures up certain images that just basically exclude a whole lot of other people.
Yeah, and I really like what you said before, how like I forget what we were talking about, but like it's kind of like this, like, yeah, it's important to recognize that like women are hit, like childcare burden does, but let's go a step further and let's talk about, well, why do women still face a childcare burden? Let's bring men and be like, hey, like, why is this still happening? And I feel like when I also think it's like a capitalist like buzzword, it's kind of like, hey, like talking about the she-covery, and it's like, no, let's just talk about what we can do. And yeah, so I really like that point about how it's important to recognize it, but to focus on it, forget so many intersections that are very important.
Yeah, and I also think too is that really when we're talking about how quote unquote women are being affected, what we're really talking about is nothing to do with like biological sex. It is everything to do with gender roles, right?
100%.
And so that really is the conversation that we need to be having, is about gender roles, because it is very strict adherence to traditional gender roles that have put us in the place that we are in now.
Yeah, I think it's definitely, and we should have pointed that out at the beginning. Unfortunately, like we tend to still view gender as such a binary thing. And it's 100% not. It's so interesting to talk about it, like in, like as we discussed, like you're in a bubble. So like with all my friends and my classes and all of these people I talk to on a daily basis, there's like this general understanding. And then it's kind of shocking to then go to the news and read the news. And you're like, well,
this doesn't just, it doesn't bode well. Like something about when I'm reading it, it feels kind of like you're missing a mark. Like I can't exactly point it out, but yeah, I think 100%, like just adhering to those gender roles, it's, you just need to move past it.
Yep.
Or not past it. I shouldn't say that. I don't know the correct, like.
I mean, I don't want to devalue the caring work. Caring work is important work for sure. And so I'm of the belief that society is not served by telling women and other folks that they need to behave like men. I don't think anybody is served by this as a perspective. And I think there's a lot to be said for, you know, encouraging men to behave like other folks, but, it's super interesting. When I teach my course is actually Women in the Economy that your colleague, took. And you know, the very first day of class, this is, I make it very clear because it's, you're right that in our bubble, people generally know what we're talking about when we talk about these things, but I actually take the time at the beginning of class to make it very clear to my class what it is. It's Women in Economy, and I make it very clear to them what exactly that means, right?
Yeah.
And we talk about gender roles, and we talk about like separating out what is biology, what is identity, and so on. Because these conversations really need to be had. It's just super important to delineate what we mean by that.
Yeah. And I think it is fair to say there are a lot of people that don't know. First, somehow they've avoided it until their whole lives up until this point. And so, yeah, I've definitely, like, I've even been in GRSJ classes at UBC, and it's great. Like, for me, it's obviously a repeat. I'm in the third year of the program, but there are students who take those classes as electives, and it's great. They want to learn, but you have to have that basic understanding, and it's important. So our next question is, I think it's very similar to what we've been talking about, kind of childcare, like unpaid work. So the pandemic and the subsequent lockdown exposed the unpaid work that women are forced to take on. Do you think that this public exposure, kind of, again, what we've been talking about, everything, will anyway shift that burden? Do you think it has the ability, like we have public attention to it now, so what do we do moving forward to make sure that like 3 years from now, we're not just in the exact same position that we are in, that we were in before the pandemic happened?
That's a really good question. You know, I think that we have a responsibility to keep the conversation going. I think that, people often, when I do interviews, especially with the media, they're always saying like, what should governments do? What should governments do? But I actually really think that employers have a lot of responsibility here, right? That the employers need to use this as an opportunity to sit down and say, okay, how much of our workplace is structured so that women are kind of segregated into jobs that give them flexibility and men are not? How do we, approach men who want more flexibility for childcare responsibilities? And then try to build that flexibility for men into their culture. And I think that is where we have the... that's where the most progress can be made. I think that, you know, somebody who's been a feminist for a very, very long time, we're almost kind of like at the end of our limit as to what women can do without everybody else's help, right? I mean, there's only so much you can do. And we really, really need the cooperation of businesses. Corporate culture across the board, it really needs to change. Right. I think that we need to stop inculcating our children with these ideas around caregiving and so on. I remember when my daughter was little, she's 20, she's grown up now. But I went out with a friend and his son was the same age as as her and his son wanted to push, they had a new baby and the son wanted to push the stroller and the father was like vicious with him. It's like, boys don't push strollers. And like, I know this is like a long time ago now, but I think there's still a lot of that. And I think that we need to be really conscious about the way that we speak to boys about caregiving and that we teach our sons that this is a valued activity. Because it's not that we want to stop caregiving. Parents will still need to be cared for, children and so on still need to be cared for. But if we value it a little bit more, I think that we would get more even distribution across people.
Yeah, I definitely think valuing it, like it's shocking to me how much we don't value it. I find that we tend to like promote the identity or the ideas that we do, like, oh, like moms are the hardest working people. But when it comes down to it, there, you don't see the value. You don't see like the understanding that like, okay, this is something we need to be looking at and moving and having a conversation about.
Is that, you know, that whole, I've had a long standing pet peeve with people who say being a stay at home mom is the hardest job in the world. This is such like, it's like this line that was created to get women to do this job. Yeah, for sure. And then, you know, change takes, it's going to take a long time, but you know, you're right when you say that maybe the COVID crisis is something that will shift the narrative. And then hopefully encourage more conversations like the one that we're having now.
Yeah. I mean, that's the point of our radio show. If anyone listens to it, hopefully that conversations are starting. But yeah, so that is all the time that we have. So just thank you so much for coming on. I really enjoyed this chat. I learned a lot. And yeah.
Yeah, it was so much fun. Thank you for having me.
This episode of Intersections is made possible by the Community Radio Fund of Canada's Radio Meters program.
Thank you for listening to Intersections, presented by the Gender Empowerment Collective. Tune in again in 4 weeks to catch our next episode. We can always be reached at our email, genderempowerment@citr.ca, for comments, feedback, and topic ideas. Music by Hero.